That's right, Miriam. Really motivated out of, as you say, that dreadful, almost unspeakable tragedy in Buncrana, which left a woman with five members of her family just gone. The pier tragedy, her husband, her mother, her sister, and two of her children. And I suppose the sense of understanding that that happened in Holy Week, and what does faith say about things like that? And I suppose Holy Week for Christians is that week in which we think especially of the suffering of Christ, but obviously then leading to Holy Saturday night, to the resurrection, to the fact that the church gives a whole season of celebrating Easter. So, I mean, sometimes we often think of the 40 days of Lent, and we don't often think then of the 40 days we have to celebrate Easter as well. So trying, I guess, to make sense of that, because the questions that people have around things like tragedies like that, how can God allow these things to happen? Why is there evil in the world? And looking, I suppose, at the scriptures, looking to the Psalms, particularly the Psalms of Lament, those Psalms that sometimes when our backs are against the wall, sometimes when dreadful things have happened, they're the only thing that can give voice to our prayer. I was thinking of, it was the anniversary of his execution recently, Martin Luther King. And he spoke about how when he was afraid, he prayed, and he felt that Garden of Gethsemane moment, and he felt that almost God sent an angel to comfort him, and he was never afraid from that moment anymore. So looking to the scriptures, looking to the passion of Christ, and trying to find some kind of meaning in that, because that's the paradoxical thing about Christianity in many ways. We believe that there's something that can be redemptive in suffering. Not that suffering's ever good for its own sake, or not that suffering is something to be enjoyed or something to be sought, but actually that in the midst of suffering, God can bring something good and something beautiful out of it, even if we can't see that in the midst of the darkness. So that's, I guess, where I was coming from.
Yeah. I mean, how do you avoid being glib, though? I mean, how do you avoid saying something like, well, it's God's will, or, you know, something that's really not going to be helpful to somebody who's suffering?
It's very difficult because words actually fail us. We really don't know what to say. And I think there's something liberating actually in saying, I don't know what to say about this. We're really uncomfortable, I think, as human beings, not knowing all of the answers. And sometimes we have to stand back and we have to say that we don't know all the answers. The idea that something like that being God's will, the idea that it would be God's will for a woman to lose her mother, her husband, her sister, and two children at the pier in Buncrana, it's unthinkable. I mean, who would ever want to know such a God? So it's emphatically not God's will. Now, when people say that, it's coming from a good place. They want to say something good. They want to see God in the story. They're struggling to see God in the picture. And they want to see God present. So that's why they say it. So it is motivated out of a good thing. So we shouldn't be too harsh when people say glib things like that, because it is a felt need to say something. But it's absolutely untrue that anything like that would ever be God's will. And in fact, it does tremendous damage to our vision of God, because then we start thinking of this capricious God, or this God who is storing up evil things to fire them at good people in the hope that they will continue serving him. That's not our vision of God. It's not the vision of God that we find in Jesus Christ, and it's certainly not the vision of God that that the church is trying to help us believe in. Yet some people do have that vision of God, but we have to help people move beyond that, understand a God that is loving, that is all merciful, that is all of those things, rather than vengeful or willing evil for people for some kind of greater purpose.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the Stephen Fry's idea of God, that idea of a capricious, evil, mean, nasty sort of God.
Well, when people rail against God, quite often I don't recognise the God that they're railing against, because it's actually not the God that I believe in. It's a caricature of a God, and quite often you find that from non-believers, particularly aggressive atheists. They've checked out of religion because the idea of God that has been sold to them is really, it's dreadful, it's awful. They don't want anything to do with a God like that. So actually, in some ways, it's the fault of the people who were behind their religious education, who gave them that sense of that kind of God that actually doesn't exist, and not the God that we believe in, and not the God that is revealed to us in the person of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and you had mentioned in your article too that Marie Lindsay was talking about prayer, and she was saying that prayer would make a difference. Again, some people might say, I don't know, can it really make a difference in a circumstance like this?
The issue of prayer is a difficult one in circumstances like this, and I thought the local school principal, Marie Lindsay, was really brave actually to raise it on the radio, because again, sometimes saying, oh, prayer can be a little bit glib. I think it's remarkable that when Pope Francis meets people, the first thing he always says to them is, pray for me, pray for me, pray for me. His first evening on the balcony, he asked the people there gathered in the square to pray for him and pray for his predecessor. Prayer really does work. I heard someone say once that prayer doesn't change God, but prayer changes us. I think that's actually true. I think a prayerful disposition is that interior openness to God, that interior openness for beautiful things to happen in your life. And it's extremely difficult sometimes, and particularly in the midst of tragedy. What do you say? And I was struck by the poignancy of the local parish priest in terms of the Buncrana tragedy, Father Paddy O'Kane. He spoke about it being in Holy Week, and he echoed those words of Christ, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, my God, why have you forsaken me? So if our God, if Jesus, if the creator of the universe has experienced that sense of abandonment, then we experience that sense of abandonment in prayer as well. And sometimes people feel a little bit guilty about that. They feel, oh gosh, if I'm doubting God, is that a sin or is that a terrible thing? Later this year, Mother Teresa of Calcutta, who some people have called the patron saint of doubt, is going to be canonized. She's going to be made a saint. Mother Teresa, for many years in her life, we now know this from her diary, she doubted God's existence. She didn't experience the presence of God. And yet she kept on quietly working. She kept on doing God's work. She kept on serving God. That's a beautiful example to us, and a beautiful example to say, it's actually okay to doubt, because particularly in the midst of awful tragedies, what person is not going to doubt? What person is not going to have those moments when they say, gosh, what sort of God are you? Or, gosh, do I really believe in this idea of God that I've been brought up with, or this religion that I'm involved in? And that's part and parcel of everyone's life, and there's something liberating, actually, I think, in naming that. And I sometimes feel when people go to church, when people go to Mass, and they feel, gosh, I have all of these doubts. Actually, everyone around them has all the doubts as well, and it's actually they're gathered as a doubting community, but saying we have enough faith to come together to celebrate the Eucharist on a Sunday morning together. We have that faith in the resurrection. That itself is kind of an antidote to the doubt.
And that's what you say in your article too, that it's a sense that you have to believe in the rumour of God.
Very much so. I mean, none of us have ever been to the life that is to come. None of us really know very much about it. We have all kinds of philosophical concepts of the afterlife. The church has a very rich theology around the afterlife. But the simple fact is we don't know. St. Francis of Assisi has a beautiful line when he says, you know, we don't know what the afterlife is like, but we'll know it when we see it. I love that image, that sense that, you know, we won't know, because what is faith if it's not the belief in things that are hoped for? And the afterlife, or the world that is to come, is very much the core of that for us. And that sense, yeah, of keeping the rumour of faith alive, that sense of people saying to us, well, you can't prove that God exists. Well, no, we can't prove that God exists. It is faith, after all. They're not a blind faith or a foolish faith in which we're asked to believe things which are just patently ridiculous, but the sense of putting our trust in God, because that's really, I suppose, ultimately what faith is, to say to God, here, I put my trust in you.